You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear how I'm pretty sure combining mantras with movement is legit magic. I mean, I stopped reading Harry Potter after the third book, so I assume the magical spell of mindful movement is covered in the latter part of the series. But if it's not, it sure as hell is covered in this episode. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am pumped that one of my favorite plant party products on the planet is sponsoring this episode. If you've spent but a few secs skimming my Instagram or binge watching my YouTube channel, which you should, by the way, if you haven't, but when you do, you'll see that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the Bees to my knees, the Wilson to my Castaway, something I would not want to live without. When I'm looking for a way to make my smoothies actually fill me up so I don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing my smoothie, I blend in Sun Warrior because I don't want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder. I use Sun Warrior. Because I am not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors, I use Sun Warrior. See, it's no wonder I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into almost every baked good I bake. If you want some recipes for doing the same, head to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/partyinmyplants. Click subscribe and you'll get an epic, easy Sun Warrior plant protein recipe in your inbox every month. And if you want to get your mitts on Sun Warrior for 15% less than the rest of the world pays to get their mitts on it, just use the code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on their site, sunwarrior.com. Again, in case you sneezed as I said that, I said you can use code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on sunwarrior.com to save 15%, my friend. The end of the sponsorship thing. I mean, let's get into the meat of the episode, or not meat, the tofu of the episode. In the same way that somebody once combined peanut butter and jelly to make a flavor combination arguably more desirable than sex, and in the same way another person, unless it was the same person, which would be pretty weird, but I'm pretty sure another person combined leggings with jeans to give our fashion-forward legs some free to the eat-em, my guest today has combined metaphysics with physical fitness in a way that can pretty much most definitely help you get some of the things, if not all the things in life that you desire. Erin Stutland has created a method of combining movement with mindfulness in an actually doable, not too woo-woo-able way. Erin is the author of the upcoming book, Mantras in Motion, Manifesting What You Want Through Mindful Movement. She's a fitness coach and creator of the Shrink Session program and the TV host of Z Living's cable series, Altered, which is all about true and lasting transformation. I've got to say that this here chat with Erin has had a true and lasting impact on me. Kind of like how once you discover how harmoniously PB&J go together, or once you try on jeggings, you can't untaste PB&J or smile as you put on regular jeans. After hearing Erin's strategies for paying attention to what the heckers you say to yourself while you're working out, you won't be able to not sweet talk yourself through your next sweat sesh. Erin, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Woohoo! Your claim to fame, just right off the bat, is combining mantras with movement. Very unique combination. First, just can you tell me what is a mantra?
Ooh, yeah, a mantra. It's a good question. A mantra is the way in which it's the way we use it is a positive statement, like an affirmation that is said in the present tense that is, you know, generally short and easy to remember.
Oh, great answer. There you go. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect definition. So what separates a mantra from an affirmation, or is it just same difference?
I think they're more or less the same.
Okay. So it's I am statements like, I am relaxed.
It could be I am statements, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. One of the mantras that I use all the time when I'm beginning something or starting to teach a class is I like to have my mantras rhyme. So they're like, it's like a small little poem. And so I like them to rhyme and I like them to have some, you know, rhythm to it. So this one that I use at the start of class is I am tuned in. I step into the flow. I have all that I need and the rest I let go.
Oh, it's like Dr. Seuss meets inspirational.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. So yes, I am statements are wonderful mantras, but I think they can be, you know, expanded just a little bit beyond that.
Oh, that's
but
awesome.
They're great when they're said in the present tense. I think that's one of the most important points about a mantra.
Why is that? I mean, can't people say like, I will get that job or like, I will get my body? Like, why is I am so much more important than future tense?
It's a great question. You want to bring it into the moment as if it already exists. So, because, you know, you will move towards that which you already are in the moment, right? So if you're saying, I will someday, you're going to stay in a state of, I will someday. Mm-hmm. You know, that's on being in the state of, I will someday. Versus if you say, I am, you're claiming it to be now. So that whatever it is you're claiming to be now can really rise up to meet you in this moment, in this present tense. And I think, you know, great, I can say all this and you can say all this, but I think it's important that one really practices it and sees how it feels different to say them both differently. I think that's really important. You know, you can listen to all the self-help people out there, but you have to try putting something into practice and see how it feels. And I think that, you know, that's really where you'll feel the difference in saying, you know, I am versus I will, and really the power in that. But you got to play around with it, and you have to play around with, you know, one thing I'll just add for you, because I know a question that often comes up around mantras, well, I don't really believe it. You know, I am powerful.
Right.
I don't think I'm powerful. And so, you know, for that, it's something, I would say it's twofold. One, you want to continue to practice it so that it does become more of a part of you. Because if sometimes the first time you say something, of course, your intellectual mind is like, yeah, I don't think so. I don't really believe that. So first and foremost, you want to practice so that it actually becomes, you know, a little bit more familiar as you go. But another thing that you want to do, and this is why I say you want to really make it your own, is, you know, you want to play with the words a little bit so that they do feel like they resonate today. So maybe if it's not, I am powerful now, maybe it's, I am willing to step into my power.
Oh, that's such a subtle change, but it does feel more approachable. I mean, saying, you know, I am powerful, or even like, I am happy. Let's say you're, you know, struggling and you're just, I am happy. Like, you could be like,
no,
I'm not happy, but like, I'm willing to step into my happiness is a totally different thing. That's so open and free and expansive. It feels really good to say or think about.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to, you know, whenever you have mantras or, you know, you see mantras on Instagram or whatever, like, take them in, say them for yourself, and then see how they feel for you. And then don't be afraid to make, you know, little adjustments. But I think just the phrase, anytime that you're struggling to really meet it and to have it, you know, feel real for you, the phrase, I'm willing, is often quite powerful to begin to move you into that. Because it's basically, you know, it's saying, yeah, I'm open. I'm considering it. You know, it's not so hard lined.
So how did you get into this? I know we just jumped right into mantras, but like, how did you meet mantras? How did this become a part of your life? And then I know, you know, you combine mantras with movement. So how the heck did that come to be?
Yeah. Well, I was a dancer growing up, so I moved around quite a bit as a young person, and you know, movement was really part of my essence. I think I love to move. I love music. I love dance. So I danced in college and went on to dance professionally. But the way I first came across mantras was I was in college and I was studying dance in college, and I had actually come to New York, where I live now. I know you do as well. I had come to New York to do a dance program for the summer. And, you know, coming from college, I was, you know, a big fish in a small pond there. And when I got to New York, I was a very small fish in a very big pod. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I was dancing with, you know, some of the best dancers in the world in this program. And I felt so intimidated and so overwhelmed and so not good enough, you know, living in that not good enough state day in and day out, really, while I was here. And at the time, I was reading a book that to this day is still one of my very favorites called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. Mm-hmm. And in the book, she talks a lot. She has a couple different exercises that help you create affirmations. And she talks, and one of your tools in the book is the morning pages. Mm-hmm. So the morning pages, for those of you who aren't familiar, is, you know, 2 to 3 pages, stream of conscious writing. You do it first thing in the morning. It's like a big brain dump, and it just helps you clear out anything and everything that's on your mind that's concerning you. And so I was doing my morning pages pretty religiously that summer.
It's a good hand workout too.
It's a good hand workout.
It is tough to write all that.
It is. It is. And so I was doing my morning pages, and I started to incorporate mantras or affirmations into my morning pages. And one of the things that I was particularly struggling with at the time was this belief or this idea that I couldn't pick up the combinations fast enough. So as a dancer, you know, part of your job is to really like show up, be in the room. The teacher teaches you a combination and you got to like spit it back out. You got to be able to repeat it and pick it up fast. And because it was feeling so overwhelmed and insecure, I'd stand in the back of the room and I'm like, I'm not getting this movement. I don't pick up combinations fast. And so, and therefore I'll never be able to make it as a professional dancer was sort of the belief system that I was operating on. Mm-hmm. And I started to write in my morning pages, I pick up combinations easily and effortlessly. I see movement and I get it. I stand at the front of the room and I feel confident. And I would write them in repetition. I would just kind of move almost through a moving meditation, if you will, with the hand of these affirmations or these mantras. And I would find that through that process, I would go into dance class and I would feel different. I would stand there and I felt like I had cleared out all the fear, this inner conversation, this inner dialogue that I don't pick up combinations fast enough. And I would have this sense of I pick up combinations easily and effortlessly. And it was that summer that I really transformed as a dancer. And my capacity to pick up combinations easily and effortlessly increased like tenfold. I came back to school a different dancer. And when I graduated college, that was really became one of my greatest strengths was picking up combinations easily and effortlessly.
What?
Yeah, it really was. And one of my first auditions out of school was for this dance company in Chicago. And I got chosen to dance with that company. And part of it was because I showed up at the audition and I was able to really get the movement fast. And it taught me that you really have the ability to change what you think and what you believe if you're willing to do the work on your beliefs. And that's something I talk about. I have a new book coming out, Mantras in Motion, which is and the subtitle is Manifesting What You Want Through Mindful Movement.
That's a lot of M's. We got a lot of M's in there.
It's a lot of M's. I love a good alliteration.
Alliteration.
If you don't know me, I've got Shrink Sessions, Soul Stroll, Magical Manifestors. Those are all my products. And for some reason, they all have alliteration.
I love alliteration. I love it so much.
But there's something about it that feels good, right?
Yes.
So, you know, in the book, I talk about, there's a whole chapter just on beliefs because we do have the power to change what we think and to change our beliefs if we're willing to do the work on it. And that's what I really discovered that summer, that I have the power to do that through using mantras, affirmations, through repetition.
That's a really incredible story. So you were your own first client, you were your own first success story. You really just proved to yourself the effectiveness of changing your beliefs to change your reality. And that's incredible. It almost sounds too easy.
Right. Well, yes. It's, you know, I don't want to say that you do that and then you're done. You know, there's lots of layers of work to be done. But this is, you know, one thing that I say in regards to, you know, mantras and manifesting in particular is, I believe you have to like approach change like it's a trifold approach. And again, this is what I teach in the book is that when you want to create change in your life and you want to manifest whatever it is that you want, whether it is an external circumstance, a relationship, a new home, or something what I feel even to be sometimes more powerful is an internal change where you say, I want to I want to cultivate and manifest more courage. I want to cultivate and manifest more kindness and compassion for myself. I think you have to approach it in three steps. I think you have to approach it intellectually, which is, you know, what we do, a lot of us do nowadays by, you know, you listen to the podcast, you read the book, you start to understand what is the concept, what is the thing that I need to intellectually, consciously begin to understand. But that's often not enough, right? Because we understand something intellectually and then like our body's like, yeah, but I'm going to go do it the other way I used to do it, you know? And so
like muscle memory.
Exactly. Muscle memory, because I could say, you know, kind of how we started this conversation, I could say sitting here in my, you know, on a couch and say, I am powerful now. And my body's like, yeah, but remember that time you totally like gave up in the middle of that class? Or remember that time that you were, you know, out and you were, you know, at an event and you like didn't speak up for yourself? Like your body's like, I remember those times. You are not powerful, right? But your mind is like, but I am. So you want to start by like understanding intellectually what it is that you want to create. And then you want to move to the heart and to the emotion. You know, what does it feel like to say I am powerful? What does that feel like in your heart? And what would that look like out in the world? And then I feel like the third piece is really putting it into your body. How do you get this concept into your body on a physiological way so that your body begins to feel powerful, so that it's not just an intellectual idea?
Oof. Well, that's where the movement comes in. And you used to have a class at Equinox where you would combine the two, and right? Is that correct?
I had a class at Equinox, yeah. And then I taught at the movement, and I've taught for many years in the city, teaching workshops and classes. Yeah, absolutely.
And then I remember your work from like a billion years ago when you would do these like challenges or something with like walking with mantras, and you would encourage people to just like go for walks and listen to something or repeat mantras. And now you have, you know, the shrink session. That's a mm-hmm. tough one. Shrink sessions and your book. And so talk to me how you like developed this formula and many formulas, it sounds like, for actually combining the movement with the mantras as like a systematic approach to mm-hmm. changing one's reality.
Well, it really started. So going back to college, you know, I had that experience of being in New York, but I hit a really dark spot in college. My mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and I just was going through a really, really tough time. And I was having a hard time keeping myself in a good, positive frame of mind on a consistent basis, and experienced a lot of anxiety and depression. And I was reading a book at the time, another book called The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino, which was about sales, but it really is a self-development book. And each week you're presented with a new scroll, and you read the scroll. You're supposed to read the scroll morning, noon, and night. And they're basically affirmations, you know? And one of them, I remember the first one of the first chapters, I will greet this day with love in my heart. And you read it three times a day. And so one thing that I would do when I was reading this book is I would go into ballet class, because I was taking, you know, I had many technique classes throughout the day. I would go into ballet class, and I would be at the bar doing my pliés, and I would be thinking to myself, because, you know, after a while, you know your plié combinations. Like, it's not, you know, you don't have to think about it too much. Obviously, your teacher is giving you sort of new variations on a combination, but you don't have to think about it too much. So I'd stand at the bar doing my pliés, and I would think, I will greet this day with love in my heart. I will greet this day with love in my heart, as I would move through the movement. And so I was already beginning to practice this concept of, how do I'm not saying anything out loud, you know, I'm a dancer. So my job is to express a thought, express a feeling through my body. And so my thought, my internal thought, as I'm doing my pliés even, was, I will greet this day with love in my heart. Well, how does that change how I do my pliés? How does that change how I stand at the bar? How does that change how I feel in that hour and a half that I'm in class by speaking positively to myself and about myself during that time? And so that was really, you know, where it began, the combination of a movement and a mantra together. And then when I was in New York, in my early days, I met a wonderful teacher named Patricia Moreno, who was also combining these concepts of self-development and movement. And I studied with her for a while. And
she's coming on the podcast soon too.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. She's a former mentor of mine. And and she was finding these things in a really wonderful and beautiful way. And I sort of, you know, after a while, kind of took what I was learning from her and started my own thing, and imbuing my own philosophies and techniques into what I was teaching with my students in all the workshops that I was forming. And it really came, you know, as far as, you know, now sort of the technique that is in the book and in the programs, it really came from trial and error, as I'm sure most of your guests you know, I'm sure most of the guests that you have on created what they created because they wanted to learn themselves first and foremost. Mm-hmm. You know, I think so many people in this industry and wellness in particular begins with like, what do you most need to learn? And the best way to learn that is to teach it. And so I was, you know, toying with things that I really needed to learn. And that's what I was teaching. And that's sort of how everything came about, as a small little workshop in New York City that then wow. I expanded and took my programs online and
so
expanded
cool.
from there.
So how would one get started moving, you know, with a mantra? Can I just like go on my normal run tomorrow and start repeating a mantra? Or is it better with dance? Is it better with weights? Like, how does one apply this now to their real life? Because it sounds so legit. I mean, it sounds really, really powerful. And I'm eager to try this on for size. And I'm sure everyone listening is as well.
Well, I believe that there's a variety of ways that one could do it. I don't think there's ever any one way. I think one of the most important things when it comes to movement in general is that you find movement that you enjoy.
Yes.
Right. So you know, so for me, I love dance. So a lot of, you know, my shrink session classes combine a lot of dance because that's what I love. And the people who come to the class usually love the class because they also like dance. And then obviously they love the combination of movement and mantras. But there are people, I have students out there that are like not into dance. Like it's not for them. So you have to find other ways that you enjoy. And that's just a general philosophy mm-hmm. I have around exercise at all.
Yes.
You like to run, you like to walk, you like spin, you like kickboxing, you like find something that brings you joy. It doesn't matter what anyone tells you will give you results. Like you know what's going to give you results?
Doing it.
And you're going to do it if you like it.
Well, what if I know people, my sister, who would claim she doesn't like any exercise. I mean, yeah. I just don't think she just falls, like she'll run for like a week and be like, and then like very easily stop running. You know, I think she just runs because I like running and she's like, I guess I should like it too. I don't know. She hasn't found her thing. So I'm sure she's not the only one out there. Like, what are your thoughts on someone who just, I don't think I like exercise at all.
Totally. Well, I think it's important that one investigates what they don't like about it and things. So what I find happens most for people who don't like exercise is they have a lot of internal negative connotation, negative story about exercise. And a lot of negative story comes up while they're moving. So, and this is kind of how it ties into why the mantras are so powerful.
It's kind of like the negative mantras you're saying people are having come up, like negative thoughts.
You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, people sometimes be like, saying mantras while you're exercising, that's weird. And I'm like, well, most likely you're doing it already.
Yes.
You're just doing it badly.
Oh my God.
And, you know, and so it's important that you kind of look and say, well, you know, for someone like your sister, well, what comes up for her when she's running, or what comes up for her when she's going to a certain class? Because a lot of the times what happens is we have, you know, this happens a lot. It happens to me too. I'll be in the middle of a workout. Things start to get hard. You know, your legs are shaking, your heart is beating, whatever it is. And you're like, this sucks. or you're like, worse, you're like, I suck. You know, or you look in the mirror and you're like, I don't like the way my body looks, you know, and the minute that you have this negative thought and this negative conversation, it takes you out.
You're
it takes
so
you
right.
out of the moment. It takes you out of the joy. In fact, there was a study done.
Oh, research.
Research. It's always good to have some.
Yes.
Up, you know,
back this up.
there was a study done and they were looking at, well, what causes the body to fatigue when it comes to exercise in particular. What causes the body to fatigue? Is it the lungs? Is it the heart? Is it the muscles? And they separated two groups, cycling groups. One was the control group and one was the experimental group. The control group went and did a cycling class, we'll say, just as normal. The experimental group did a cycling class and they were given mantras or affirmations to say out loud while they moved. Things like, I got this, I'm doing it, I'm strong, whatever it was. And what they found was that the group with the mantras were able to go longer. It took them longer until they fatigued. And what they learned from that is that, you know, fatigue doesn't necessarily happen in the body first. It happens in the mind first. So the minute that you start to have this negative conversation, you think that your body's like, yeah, I'm done. But really, it's the mind that's saying, we're done. We're checked out. And so why the mantras are so powerful is that it replaces that. It doesn't give space for the negative conversation or the negative story to exist. And then what happens from there, and something that, you know, I'd be so curious if your sister tried it, what would happen? What happens with my students, people who don't like exercise, who just can't get into it, they've never liked exercise, is because they're now saying the mantras and the affirmations, they now spend, instead of spending 20 minutes like having this crappy conversation with themselves, they spend 20 minutes having an empowering conversation with themselves. And all of a sudden they're like, I can't wait to work out again.
Wow.
Because it feels so good and it feels so empowering and it feels so loving. You know, that's what I would say to somebody who doesn't like working out is you got to investigate. I really would invite you to like write down, well, what conversation comes up for you while you're exercising? Maybe before, maybe after, but really while it's happening.
Oh,
and that's
yes.
the conversation you want to work on. And that's why I say that you can use the mantra, going back to your question, you can use the
my first question.
Your first question,
good
right.
Good job. You're impressive.
You can use the mantras really in any way that works for you. It's good to start. I will say it's kind of hard to just kind of throw yourself in without any direction. So it's good to start with some structure. And so it's actually, you know, in the book, every chapter has mantras, and then there's a series of really easy movements at the end. And it's good to start, and we have some accompanying videos as well. It's good to start with something that you can follow, so you don't have to think too much about it. Like, let me teach you, you know. But that being said, my goal is never with any of my work to say like, this is the end all be all. Like, this is where you stop with your mantras and motion. You know, my goal is to say like, let me give you some tools that you can then take and take them for a run or take them to your spin class or go to kickboxing. And that's also where some of the other things, you know, I have the soul stroll. You mentioned the walk that I send people
that's
on.
That's the soul stroll.
That's the soul stroll. So that's
such a good name.
That's
such a good name.
Yeah,
soul stroll. I love it. So tell us what that is.
So that is just a playlist that I created, really fun, energizing music. And then it's me coaching over with mantras. And so that is something that you can take on a walk, on a run, on a bike. You can take it to the gym and do if you have like your own routine that you like to do at the gym. So it's just a playlist. So it's not specific directions. I'm not telling you what moves to do. We're just playing with the mantras to music. And cool. That's also a really nice way to get started.
You could do it during like doing errands.
Oh my God. People do it like while they're driving their car on the subway, you know, on their way to a meeting. I have a free one too. So I'll make sure you have the link to that.
And oh yes.
If people want to go download a free one, we can send them. If you go to my website, aaronsutland.com, and you click on the walk it out button at the top right hand corner, you can get a free soul stroll.
Oh, cool. That sounds great. How long is the free one?
The free one is 20 minutes.
Oh,
so it's a perfect little workout.
That's a grocery shopping trip without a lot of traffic.
Exactly.
A lot of things. It's a good size walk. That's great. That's awesome. As you were talking about the negative thoughts that we have during movement that make us then not like the movement, I can so relate to that with yoga. I've been very honest with everyone that I just don't like yoga. I've tried. But every time I'm in a class, I think it's just like, now that we're talking, just negative thoughts, like just unpleasant thoughts, versus when I'm, you know, pumping iron or running, I just have like happy thoughts and I love it. And also, you know, as you were talking, another thing that came to mind is sometimes on my runs, I'll just start going into a negative place. Like maybe I'll just think of something that's stressful or that I'm upset about that happened. And I start thinking about it and I start harping on it. And I notice my pace slows down significantly.
Yes.
And I'm like, wait, why are you going so slow?
Yes.
And then I'm like, change the channel. So I'll change and I'll think about something happy. And all of a sudden, I'll go fast again. It's crazy. I'm my own science experiment to support your theories with research.
Exactly. It really is amazing how that works. I talk about that as one of the first stories that I share in my book, this concept of our ability to change the channel. And I love that you like put that into practice on your run, because our thoughts influence how we feel. And so if you're on your run and you're thinking about that thing that's stressful, it influences how your body's feeling, which is why you slow down. And you prove it to yourself and again that you have the ability to simply change the channel And I call it that too, where, so I love that. So where you are literally thinking about something else that just simply makes you happy and makes right. you feel good. And that alone begins to create a different feeling. And as a result, the body wants to move a little bit more.
Yeah, it's freaking amazing. It's awesome. So like in your book, you say you offer some movements that one can do with the mantras. What are some of these movements? Are they like jumping squats or like dance? I don't know any dance moves, shimmying. Shimmy.
I love a good shimmy.
I'm like shimmying right shimmy. Now. Doing it.
Totally. Love a good shimmy. I wanted to keep the movements really basic and straightforward so that just about anyone could do them, you know, no matter your fitness level. So there are things as simple as a lunge, a single leg lunge, or a side lunge, or even moving into a chair pose like in yoga. Yes. There's something where I do like single punches, you know, just right, left, right, left. So they're all pretty, they're basic, but they are also designed to, you know, get your energy up. So you will be challenged, but not challenged because you can't figure them out. Because I didn't want somebody to look at the book and be like, what is she doing?
Yeah. There are other dance instructors whose work I have looked at before and been like, what the hell is that move? How my body can't move that way.
Yeah. So, I know. I know. Yeah. I figure for the book, let's keep it really simple and, you know, everyone can learn more. But I think it doesn't have to be complex to be good, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that you do say in your book is that you don't have to work out hard or for a long time to reap the benefits of movement with mantras. You know, you say that in just 5 minutes, you can achieve a mental and emotional shift while improving your physical fitness. But I'm curious for you to tell me a little bit more about that because, you know, going back to my runs, like I need a good like 35 plus minutes. Like intense sweat session to make me yeah. feel any difference, like emotionally or mentally or physically. But is it different for every person? Or do you really think people can just like do things for 5 minutes and feel different?
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on the kind of shift that you're wanting and that you're needing. So for you, you might need that 20, 30 minutes to get a good sweat going. But the kind of shift that I'm talking about that I believe can happen, well, first of all, you know, there's also still studies and science that says these shorter intense workouts are actually extremely effective. But those ones that we're talking that they're talking about that you read about like the New York Times workout, there's that 7 minute workout. Those are fairly intense and they're designed to be really intense so that they can be effective. So I believe that those are awesome. And then I also believe that you can take 5 minutes and the shift that I'm talking about is this internal shift where you go from feeling not so great, not so sure, to feeling more confident, more joy, more self-acceptance. And I do believe that that can happen in 5 minutes if you're really dialed in. And I obviously believe that using the mantras will help you get there fast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes if stuff at work is stressful and I just take my dog out for a walk, I can come back a new person.
Exactly.
That's a short, real change that I can feel. Well, talk to me about manifesting, because that's a big chunk of your book, you know, attracting what we think about. So have you proven the effects of manifestation in your own life? I mean, I know we talked about in the beginning how you became much better and faster at memorizing the dance moves, but what about like tangible things? Is that something that people can try to manifest with?
Absolutely. I mean, that is definitely, so in the book, I take you through different processes and it all starts with, getting clear on your desire and what it is that you want. What do you want to manifest? And I think
sometimes that's hard.
Yeah.
Even like figure that out.
And that is exactly why I wrote the book, because I take you through a process that will help you get clear on your desire. Because that is the most important part.
But why is it so hard? Like, shouldn't it be easy to be like, I want this? But sometimes it's actually very challenging to identify what you want. I think because there's noise, you know, you see stuff on Instagram and then you think you want that because that person seems happy with it. Or I guess there's social norms. I mean, I don't know. Why do you? I can't believe you're telling me you wrote the book for this sole purpose. I did not know that. That's awesome. Yeah. That was very organic. Tell me more.
Well, no, I think you bring up a really great point. I was just doing a Facebook Live today on Hay House, who's my publisher. Okay. And I was sharing these stumbling blocks of even just creating and naming your desires. And one of them is exactly what you said. We're so busy, we're so distracted that we just simply don't make the time to tune into ourselves. And we don't have the right tools to articulate, to get into our own internal landscape and then articulate what it is that we want, not what we think we should want, not what our social norms tell us we want, but what we really want. And so I have some exercises, not only in the book, but also if you pre-order the book, I right now have a Magical Manifestors free workshop and I teach you some exercise and you get that right away. So if you pre-order
the book right now,
you get it right now. You get it right now. It's an hour long.
I want it.
Yeah. It's really good and juicy. So take you through an exercise to help you get clear on what you want. So one of the stumbling blocks is we don't make the time. And then another really big stumbling block that's important to kind of name and acknowledge is that, let's say we do get clear, we do make the time, we do name it, we then don't trust it. And we think, well, do I really want that? I'm not sure. Why do I want that? Maybe it can't happen. We're afraid to say it because we think it's not actually going to happen. So we don't really want to say it.
Yeah.
And so we have this distrust about what it is that we really want. And
so legit.
I think,
so true.
You know, and so that's really important to get connected to your desires so that you trust them, that you don't need to know where they're going to lead you, and that you're willing to take action on it. And so the book starts with this concept of desire. And so going back to your question of like, how do you manifest the external things? Well, we start with desire and we start with naming what those desires are. And we start with practicing trusting those desires. And then I take you through a series of movement and mantra to help you. So let's say now you do the work and you get clear on your desire. Like, what's one thing, Talia, that you can think about?
I'm thinking, what do I want? I don't know. You're putting me on the spot. Okay, what do I want? What do I want? What do I want? I honestly don't know. I want a no. This is so dumb. I just want a good winter coat.
Oh, great. Okay, I love it. Why not?
Right? I'm really struggling to find a good winter coat.
Okay, listen. I had a whole conversation with my mom friends about this, and people were like sharing their winter coats. So I'm with you.
It's tough out there.
It's tough out there. We can talk offline. I've got a list of winter coats for you. Anyway. So there you go. You named your desire. But so let's say, okay, so I love that you shared that because some might think, well, that's just like, you know, silly. But like,
it's so
you
wanna, silly.
But it's not, because you do need a winter coat. But you also want to think about what, like, you want to think about also the why and the feeling. This is where, how you want to start to connect with your desire. Again, may sound silly that it's for a winter coat, but this is really
for anything. Why do you want to go to like a big, deep place right now? I just got married. I just had a great wedding. Things are great. You know, big things. I'm more on like, you know, small things right now. Things were just really big.
Yeah, totally. I totally get that. So you think about those things, but then you want to, you know, it's fun. It's fun to play with even the small things on it and then start to, you know, let it be playful then. You know what I mean? If it is a winter coat, then have it be like, how can I manifest a winter coat? Like, that's my desire. Like, and then you, like, I know this sounds silly, but be like, what are the qualities that you want in this coat? You know, you want warmth. You want it to be cute. You want,
it
to feel
long. I want it to go below my butt.
You want it to go below your butt. Right?
A cool color. I've thought a lot about this damn coat.
Color. I'm sure you've thought about it already, right?
Yeah.
So then you know, but now again, you may want to use the book for that. And then you start to take, you know, then I've got mantras and movement where you start to really take this vision that you have for yourself and get it into your body. Now, are you going to do that for a coat? You might. You might. Why not?
Well, this whole thing started where I was like, I really need a new coat on my runs when I would see all these, because I run over the Williamsburg Bridge where a lot of people walk to work on it and they are dressed cute and they're going to work. I'm on my run and I'm seeing all these awesome women in awesome coats and I'm like, shit, I need a new coat. That's why I've been looking at everyone's coats. So I literally am like pondering it and like thinking about it in my soul.
Well, so I love that you said that. I love that you said that because, again, this might, you know, for everyone listening, this might be like, oh, that's so silly. But I guarantee you that you and I will connect in a couple weeks and you're going to be like, Erin, you got to see this coat that I got. And the reason why you will end up like attracting this coat is because you're spending so much time thinking about it, feeling, looking at it. You're even like thinking about it on your runs. You're getting that like desire into your body.
Yeah,
I know this sounds really silly, right?
No, it's good. It's a good tangible, like, you know, it's more, much more tangible than being like, I want more confidence, you know, or something like that. That's harder, but this is a good, you know, personification or whatever for a bigger picture idea.
Totally. And that's how like manifestation works. That being said, I think I am actually all for people who want to take this concept for more internal things, like having more confidence, like having those things can be manifested as well.
Yeah. Well, clearly based on your, you know, story about dancing.
Right. Right. Yeah,
that was like a talent you manifested, like a skill, a way of being.
Yeah. A way of being. That's amazing. That's what I believe is actually sometimes even more powerful. The ability to manifest a way of being, I think, you know, that to me is magic, you know?
I fully agree with that, fully. And that's the same thing. You would just name the way of being. So if I want to be more easygoing, let's say, more chill, then I would name that, you know, call it my desire and then start, I guess, working it into my body through the mantras paired with movement.
Yeah, that's the tip of the iceberg. And then we take you though through, you know, the next stage of that is your beliefs. And even for something like, you know, what are your beliefs around being more relaxed and chilled? Because I know that, again, these might sound small, but it's actually, there's probably a reason why you're not that way. And there's a belief that you have, like, if I'm more relaxed, if I'm more chill, everything's going to go to shit, or I'll never be successful. Like, you people operate around that belief all the time. And so they act in an uptight type A way because they believe about themselves that there's no way to be, that you get stuff done.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, then we start to play with, well, you know, but obviously for whatever reason, being uptight is not serving you and you want to change to being a more chill, relaxed person. So, you know, then we look at the beliefs. So how can we create new beliefs that support the idea of you being relaxed, which is something to the effect of being more like, the more relaxed I am, the more that flows to me.
Oof, you know, you're so good at these mantras,
you know, and that's something that's like a simple little switch that then we work on the belief through the movement and the mantra, you know.
And then there's inspired action, right? That's another thing you talk about in your book, and taking inspired action.
That's right. So if, for example, if you're working on this idea of manifesting, being more relaxed and chilled, you know, actually your inspired action around that could be non-action.
Yeah.
You know, it could be, I'm not, you know, you could be somebody who runs around and feels like they have to go to all the events and all the things. And your inspired action might be saying no to those things, you know, and saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to stay in tonight and take a bubble bath. That's my inspired action for being more relaxed and chilled. And the more I relax, the more things come to me easily and effortlessly. And so you're working on the desire, the belief, the inspired action.
Amazing. This is might be a funky question, but how do we know if our action is inspired or uninspired?
Yes. Well, first and foremost, you want to check in with yourself. And you want to always ask yourself, am I taking this action because I think I should? Or because I feel called to, because I want to. I think that's really the biggest things that you want to look at before you take an action. Is it my ego that's driving me to this? Is it because I'm trying to get something external? Is it because I think I should? Or is it because I feel excited about it? You know, inspired action should feel fun. It should feel playful. You should be drawn to wanting to do it. That doesn't mean you're not afraid of maybe taking the action, but you should feel drawn to it. And when you're doing it, inspired action, you should feel like you are in a sense of flow. Versus when you're not in inspired action, it feels really hard, like you're pushing a boulder up a hill.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. So then being in a state of flow feels like the opposite of pushing a boulder up a hill. Like, how would you describe being in a state of flow? Like, how does one know if they're in the flow?
I think one knows when they're in the flow when they feel like they're not overanalyzing. They're not thinking anything. They feel a sense of ease in their body and in their mind. And it doesn't feel like they're pushing.
Mm.
So when they feel like they're pushing versus when they're flowing. Right?
Wouldn't you say yeah, you feel that's that? Literally perfect. That was such a perfect. I'm excited to write that down and share that more and more, because that was a beautiful definition. I don't remember what you said, but it was wonderful. It was awesome. So one thing in the book you also talk about is that fear is a feeling, that it isn't the truth. It's a feeling. Tell me more about that and how, you know, how did you learn that? Where did that come from? That fear is a feeling. It isn't the truth.
I think that we get really attached to fear. You know, it comes up and we're like, because I'm afraid, it must mean X, Y, and Z. So mm-hmm. we attach it to a story. Same thing like with the exercise. And then it kind of prevents us from taking action. You know, I remember when I was years ago, so after I danced, I was acting professionally and I wrote a one-woman show and okay. that I had written, and I had hired a director and I had produced it myself. And I remember the night it was opening and I was standing backstage. Of course, I was so afraid because I was not only was I going on stage to act, but I had written it and it was, you know, it was my heart that I was about to share. And I remember, you know, going standing backstage and being like, you are such an idiot, Erin. Why would you do this? Like, why would you put yourself through this? And you're going to put yourself out there. And I was having this internal conversation and it was because I was afraid, and fear sort of presented itself to me and kind of calling me an idiot, saying that I was stupid, you know, and it felt true. And it felt like, yes, you are an idiot, but it was really just a feeling in the moment. And I think all of us have our own fear that, we have our own brand of fear. You know, for me, when I get afraid, I tend to go into a story in my head, like, you idiot, Erin, this is your fault. You created it. You know, some people have, when fear comes up for them, some people have blame. They go, why did that person put me in this situation? It's their fault. Mm-hmm. You know, and we all have our own brand of fear. And so it's important to kind of know and learn your brand. What is the feeling that comes up, and know that it is just a story and it is not the truth.
That's amazing. I'm trying to think what my brand is right now. It's either you're similar to yours, like, you're an idiot, what are you doing? Or it's more like, this is going to be terrible.
Yeah,
it's more
yeah.
of like, it's not like mad at other people, like they did it to me. It's like, oh, this yeah. is a disaster.
Yeah, it's like the world is falling apart.
Yes.
That's yeah, your brand.
That
the word,
be my
the
brand.
World is falling apart and this is just horrible.
Yes. It's a wonderful brand.
right. But even so now, like, we're laughing, and it's important to be able to, I think, to laugh at it. You know, obviously when you're in it, it's a little bit harder to laugh at it, but the more you can laugh at it when you're not in it and kind of get to know it, then when it does come up, you don't take it so personally.
Yeah. And laughing is movement.
Mm-hmm. And laughing is movement. That's true.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, do you have a favorite mantra from your book?
Favorite mantra. This is a bonus mantra that I love. This one is always so popular with people. And it's really simple. It's just, I am enough. I have enough. I do enough every single day. That one is a simple one.
That's a good
it didn't necessarily
one.
Rhyme.
It didn't rhyme. I'm really let down.
That one's not a rhyming one. I am enough. I have enough. I do enough every single day. If you want one that rhymes, I've got one for inspired action, which is,
okay, do that.
I am taking action. Today is the day. I will feel the fear and I will do it anyway.
Wow. Wait, say that one more time.
I am taking action. Today is the day. I will feel the fear and I will do it anyway.
I like that one. I like that a lot. That one, like, yeah. makes me think of, like, that explosive, like, emoji on the phone or whatever, that, like, fire one that's, like,
psh. I love it.
Yeah, that's what comes to mind. That's just such a badass one. That's so cool.
I need to have all my mantras have emojis.
Oh, yeah. How many mantras are in the book?
There are 9 mantras in the book, and there are many more available through all the other channels of which I share.
3 that you got today. I feel like at least 3 we
yeah.
said today.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But what's great about the book is it's not just the mantra. Like, I make sure that you go deep so that you understand what the mantra is, you know,
right.
So it's not just that you're just saying the mantra, but you get the intellectual and the heart and the physical behind it.
No, it's great because most books just, you learn things and then you stop reading the book. But this is like a way to learn something and then actually apply it to your next walk or workout or shower.
Exactly.
How many mantras, like can you over mantra yourself? Should you just pick one and repeat it for like a month and then move on to the next one? Can you do multiple in a day? Like, what are your thoughts on like over mantraing? Because I feel like we live in a time where everyone over everything's, you know, it's like
totally
20,000 superfoods in one smoothie. Like, it's all good. So
that's hysterical. That's a really good question. You know, when I was teaching my workshops, I would create a series of mantras and a movement sequence that went with it. Sort of a choreographed dance that went with it. And I would teach the same ones for a month. And so we'd have, you know, however many classes you came for during that month, you would get the same, you know, sort of routine and mantras and theme, because I thought it was really important for people to sit with it for a while and to, you know, and I felt like every time I would come, you know, even if I was teaching once a week, I'd come back the next week and I would learn something new about that same mantra. I would approach it from a slightly different angle and it would mean something different to me. So I think it's really valuable to have one and to sit with it for a while.
Yeah.
And let it sit with it for a month. Like, really marinate on it. Let it be your driving force for a couple weeks. Maybe more, you know, sometimes. And then, you know, move on to something else that you may need that may be calling you. I'm a less is more kind of a person in general. You know, I'm like, well, I don't need 20 superfoods in my smoothie. One or two will be just fine.
Totally.
So I'm a less is more when it comes to that kind of thing. And I think focus in on one, get to know it, get intimate with it, approach it from a couple different angles and see what happens.
And let it become your actual belief. I mean, if we're switching mantras four times a day, it's just a fleeting thought more than like a core belief, I think.
That's right. That's exactly right. And we don't want it to be like something that you just like scroll on Instagram, see it, you're like, oh yeah, I love it, like, and then you keep scrolling.
Bookmark.
And
you forgot
about it. You want to like really practice living it.
Yeah, like have it become your new identity, your new way of being, as we've spoken about.
Exactly.
Oof, I love this. This is such a fun conversation. Oh, this is great. Well, we were just talking about smoothies, which is a perfect segue into my final planty questions for you. What is your favorite plant to eat? We shifted gears a lot.
My favorite plant to eat. Yeah, no, it's great. What is my favorite plant to eat? I'm thinking about like what I cook for my daughter, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
I love some good sauteed kale, but I would be lying if I said my favorite plant wasn't a sweet potato.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love it. It just satisfies so many layers for
Amazing.
You.
It's comfort food, but it's just from the ground.
It's comfort food. I have such a sweet tooth. So for me, it really satisfies my sweet tooth and makes me like crave sugar less if I have a little bit of sweet potato in a meal. And it's got so many nutrients. So I think I'm going to go with sweet potato.
I like it. I support that. Speaking of being a mom, you're a newish mom, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Congrats. I have a daughter who's turning, thank you. She'll be one in just a few weeks from now.
Oh, that's wonderful. A holiday baby. Holiday
baby. Yeah, she was born right after Thanksgiving, a few days after Thanksgiving.
That's so nice. How has being a new mom changed how you see exercise or how you relate to exercise or how you exercise?
Well, that's a great question. And I think the bigger question is, do you still exercise? I do, of course. You know what? After I had the baby, I really wanted to make a commitment to myself. You know, my word for the year was nourish. And I wanted to make it was very important to me to not feel after I had the baby that like, I gotta get my body back. I was not interested. I really was not interested in that conversation. It didn't feel like the most valuable conversation to have, but felt like the most valuable conversation to be having with myself and others around motherhood was how I'm doing, you know, how my spirit is, how well I'm nourishing myself, how I'm taking care of my daughter, how I'm taking care of myself. And it had nothing to do with the shape of my body. And so as a result, I did feel really fortunate in that I felt like kind of my body just sort of nicely kind of came back into place, just kind of without really doing too much. I decided that I wasn't even going to attempt to do much exercise other than a little bit of exercise, like honestly for like 6 months. Which I know sounds crazy, but I would do gentle things, really gentle, but I wasn't interested in going back into any hardcore working out for 6 months. I wanted to give myself a lot of time and space. And then when I decided, okay, I'm ready to kind of get back into it, I really had to ease into it because I had, you know, you lose a lot of strength when you have a baby and If you're breastfeeding, you're not producing a ton of testosterone, so your muscles are really soft. So I had to find a way to move in a different way. And of course you're tired. You're like the most tired ever. Like I thought I was tired before I had a baby, and then I had a baby. I'm like, no, this is tired.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. So you just like, I have like a little bit less energy to do it, but, I commit to it. And this may sound harsh, but I make myself do it because I know that it gives me more energy when I go. And it's not about doing it hardcore. It's not about going crazy. It's about giving myself a little time and space to move my body because I know it will make me feel better. And so, it ebbs and flows. You know, I try to go some weeks. I say I'm going 4 times this week, and sometimes I make it twice, you know, and I try to go and give myself a short workout. Whether that's literally 10 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes, sometimes if I can fit in a class, I'll take an hour long class.
It's really interesting that you said make yourself, because I would have assumed based on our conversation that you wouldn't be a make yourself kind of gal. And it's really refreshing to hear you say that. I mean, we've spoken a lot. I love running. It's very obvious. I love it, love it, love it. But I have to make myself run every single day. Even though I love it, I have to make myself get out there every day. So so you're a supporter of the make yourself movement?
I am. I'm a supporter of the make yourself. You know what? I'm a supporter of just do it. Like, I think there's something to the brilliance of Nike's slogan. I really do. And I think sometimes like people are like, but why can't I stay committed? What should I do? What's the magic trick to kind of to stay on the path and to stick to it? And I say, here's the magic trick. Just do it. Yeah. It's 3 words, you know? And, I say, especially now after having a baby, like every single time I work out, 0% of me wants to go.
Yeah.
Zero, you know, and I do it, you know, the more I do it, the more I kind of crave it. I think that's what happens with exercise, but it doesn't, it's, you know, you got to carve out the time and then you got to stop everything else that you're doing. So it's hard. And I think it's important to be honest about that. And you know, if you want to do it, you gotta just do it.
Just do it. Nike. This episode is sponsored by Nike. No, just kidding. Okay. What is your favorite planty restaurant?
Oh, my favorite planty restaurant. Maybe Peace World Cafe, although I haven't been there in a while.
It doesn't have to be like vegan, just anywhere you get like nourishing food.
Oh, nourishing food. You know, I love Westville.
Oh, I went last night. That's so funny.
Oh, did you? Is there one in by you?
No, I was in Chelsea.
In Williamsburg? Oh, yeah. I used to live by that one. So now there's one in Dumbo. So it's close to me.
Oh, yeah, there is.
But it's like my go-to. And you know what? They deliver so fast. But it's awesome. They always have good, they have so many good market vegetables. I feel like they have a lot of good plant-based stuff.
Yeah. Yes, it's great there. I got 4 plants last night. Awesome. What is your most used kitchen tool?
I would say it's a small, like frying pan, like a small little one for eggs, or like now I make my daughter, an egg, banana, avocado pancake. So I do that a lot.
Yum. Mm.
Yeah. It's delicious.
That's really good. What is a book that has really inspired you in some awesome way besides your own book?
Well, I love The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. That is definitely my turning point book. And I'm reading another really beautiful book now called The Conscious Parent, for anyone who is a parent out there, by Shefali Sabari.
Nice.
It's a beautiful book on parenting, and it's really about self-reflection. And it's not about like teaching a parent more parenting skills. It's more about teaching you how to be a better human being and therefore becoming a better parent.
Would it work if I'm a doggy parent?
Sure. Why not?
All right. Maybe I'll check it out. Well, where can people stay connected to you? Where can they get your book? When does it come out, by the way?
It officially publishes on January 8th. But if you go to erinstutland.com, I'm not sure when this podcast will be airing.
It'll come out before that.
Great.
Yep.
So if you go to erinstutland.com/book, you can go to that page and you'll see all the delicious bonuses that we're giving away when you pre-order. So you can find me there. You can find me on erinstutland.com, and you can get your free soul stroll if you click on the Walk It Out button in
Everyone
the upper right hand corner.
Yes.
Get that free soul stroll. Get it.
Yeah.
Get it. And then I'm also on Instagram @erin.stutland.
Amazing. Well, this was the best conversation. Thank you so much for coming on today. And I'm so excited to get my hands on your book and go strolling with my soul and your sounds. And just thank you so much.
Thanks, Talia.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I told you after listening, it'd be impossible to not sweet talk yourself through your next sweat sesh. I'm excited to hear how your workouts and even your walks improve with this newfound knowledge or again found reminder that what you think about really matters. Dare I say, what you think about sticks to your reality like a PB&J sticks to your mouth roof. Good Lord, I must really be craving a PB&J. I mean, I'm really craving PB&J. Don't forget to go grab Erin's free awesome Soul Stroll playlist, which you can grab at the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/119. And for the record, my sister approves of the publishing of this episode. Oh, and also for the record, the day after recording this interview with Erin, I found a freaking glorious winter coat.